Welcome to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. There's no doubt this will be a historic hurricane season for Florida. Either it will be the first year in a decade that the state gets hit by a hurricane, or the decade-long run without a storm notches its 11th year. Already, this is the longest stretch without a major Category 3 hurricane or stronger hitting the continental U.S. since the 1860s. It's been the quietest span of years without a big storm since Ulysses S. Grant became president. He's the guy on the $50 bill. This 2016 hurricane season, officially only 6 days old, but already Tropical Storm Colin is moving through the Gulf of Mexico, threatening to bring lots of rain and some wind to parts of Florida. It's a reminder of the threat we face. It's a risk millions of Floridians spend billions of dollars with property insurance companies to take. WLRN had the exclusive interview with four people at the center of the financial preparedness of the state and the insurance industry here.
Jeff Atwater, Chief Financial Officer, State of Florida.
Atwater oversees the state's financial services, including oversight of the insurance industry, and that includes
David Altmaier, Insurance Commissioner, State of Florida.
Now, Altmaier is new to the job, to the state's top insurance regulator. He won the gig last month after beginning with the agency as an examiner just 6 years ago. He replaced this guy,
Kevin McCarty, the outgoing insurance commissioner of the state of Florida.
After 13 years in that job, McCarty is sticking around until August for the transition to his successor. McCarty's tenure weathered the historic 2004-2005 storm seasons and the rise and, more recently, the reduction of the state's own insurance company, led by this guy,
Barry Gilway, CEO of Citizens.
Gilway has led the company through its depopulation efforts, essentially steering people who had gotten property and windstorm insurance from the state into policies offered by private insurers. So how prepared is Florida and its insurance companies? That's the central question. And this quartet of officials all express confidence that the state and the industry are in the best shape they've been in some cases ever, to financially withstand a 1-in-100 storm. We began the conversation with Florida's Chief Financial Officer, Jeff Atwater.
That could be about a $20 billion, $25 billion event if it hit the wrong place at the wrong time at high tide here in Southeast Florida or in Tampa Bay. And so that's the kind of event that could occur. And then so the question becomes, which is part of our conversation with you today, is how well are we prepared and who will absorb that risk? Will it be a global marketplace or will it be taxpayers of Florida? And that's what we've spent 10 years working on. So you could have a significant multi-billion dollar, tens of billion dollar event if we were hit at the wrong time in the wrong place.
So David, with the $25 billion kind of worst case scenario, how much of that is insured losses versus economic losses?
So a good majority of that is going to be an insured loss. And as the CFO indicated, a lot of that's going to depend on where the storm falls. And it's also going to depend significantly on the insurance companies and how much of that risk that they've chosen to retain versus how much they've chosen to reinsure that in the global reinsurance market.
And what have you been seeing, the trends as we enter into another hurricane season, about that acceptance of the risk within the state of Florida versus the purchasing of that risk transfer to reinsurance companies?
It appears to be another soft reinsurance market for our insurance companies, which is going to benefit consumers at the end of the day. Insurance companies are able to get more favorable reinsurance terms. They're able to get more favorable contract terms. They're able to get them at more favorable costs, which does nothing other than protect our consumers in a more favorable fashion.
Kevin McCarty, you've seen a great many years of storm insurance seasons here. How does the one that we're on the eve of, that we're just beginning, compare in terms of the financial wherewithal?
Well, clearly, in the last few years, we've continued to see a softening of the reinsurance market. We're going in probably the best position we've been in over a decade. Certainly, clearly, the position of the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund, Citizens Property and Casualty, which is as small as it's been in many, many years. And as Commissioner Altmaier has already alluded to, most of the risk that is taken by some of our companies that may not be name brands to most Floridians, like the most national companies, but our indigenous companies have shed their risk by spreading it in the global reinsurance market, which right now is at an all-time high in terms of its capacity. We have new innovations in that marketplace, which has been creating an opportunity like we've seen never before, with more competition than I've seen probably since I've been insurance commissioner for 13 years.
The terminology here gets complicated and complex really quick, but reinsurance essentially is insurance for the insurance companies. You're just off-putting that risk to some other organization, and presumably it helps absorb any losses when there's a tragedy that comes ashore. President Gilway, how is Citizens prepared for this storm season compared to, say, the last 10, the last 12?
Well, we've never been ever in our history quite as well prepared financially. We currently have about 490,000 policyholders. We used to have, just 4 years ago, over $500 billion in exposure. And today that's down to about $140 billion in exposure. And we're the same. We're representative of the insurance market in Florida. We're placing significant amounts of exposure offshore.
Mm-hmm.
We're transferring risk to through both the traditional reinsurance and the cat bond market offshore.
Catastrophic bond market, where you can raise additional dollars if you need them.
That's correct.
Yeah. So everybody's sleeping well at night, it sounds like, here, right? As June starts, everybody's getting full nights of sleep, not watching the radar and the weather forecast out of the coast of Africa, then, CFO Atwater?
Tom, let me tell you, in 2009, 2010, 2011, all of us were lighting candles at night before we went to bed.
Yeah.
But it is. This has been an extraordinary journey. It's been disciplined. It's been trying to find ourselves back to a private market solution. And all of this benefits the taxpayer. All of this benefits the consumer. An extraordinary, robust insurance market, placing that risk around the globe. What you're hearing has been a long time coming.
Let's talk about some of that insurance risk and some of that ability for the state of Florida to absorb a multi-billion dollar loss if we see something like a 1992 Andrew, a singular event that is massive, or a 2004-2005, a series of storm after storm that adds up quickly. The Florida Catastrophic Hurricane Fund, if a big storm hits, three or higher, hits this season, you've got $17.5 billion in that catastrophic fund, the most ever. What is that poised for, however? Is that poised for an 04-05 series of seasons, or is that poised for a 92 series of seasons?
Tom, it can be both. If you have an injury event, we're now in good shape. We could withstand that kind of an event, and with the CAT fund capital that we now have, and as was already mentioned, with offloading some of that risk in both reinsurance and bonds, we have the capacity that we need. We're fully funded. But it can also mean that if you had multiple events, if you had a summer of 04-05 where you had a series of events, what your listeners, what consumers would care about is, will the claim be paid?
Right.
And within, you know, 9 or 10, 20 days, we have to have those resources onto those insurance companies that we have provided the backup reinsurance for in the CAT fund. And almost by any type of scenario that you would run, we should be able to handle it. So we're in good shape.
$25.4 billion is what it would take to exhaust the catastrophic fund in terms of the cash balance. And that's made up of the balance that the fund has, as well as the ability to go to the open market and raise IOUs, bonds backed by Florida taxpayers, the risk transfer, which is the other way to say reinsurance here, and the ability to even sell new bonds. So let me ask the new insurance commissioner, David, you're inheriting quite a large S here. What does it mean for the insurance market, for the private insurance market, and the private homeowner that's looking at premiums that are going to come up for the next season as they're trying to figure out that surcharge that they're seeing on their automotive insurance and their other types of insurances that pays into this fund?
So the surcharges are left over from some prior storm events, but I think that is indicative, as the CFO indicated, and you've alluded to, the strength of the CAT fund, where it is, the strength of Citizens in terms of where they are now, it significantly reduces the likelihood that our consumers are going to see future surcharges show up on their insurance premiums, because of the fact that were we to have a significant catastrophic event this season or next season, that the CAT fund and Citizens are going to be able to meet their policyholder claims obligations without the need to add those surcharges onto their policies. And so I think that is a really good place for our consumers to be.
So is the message no future catastrophic surcharges seen if we have what would be considered a normal hurricane season?
And a lot of it is going to depend on what you consider a normal hurricane event. You know, 1992, obviously, we had the one big event. 2004 and 2005, we had a lot of little small events. And so, you know, there's so much goes into exactly the number of storms that arrive, where they hit, who they hit, that are going to go into that. But the indications are very positive where we are currently.
Kevin, that surcharge was never popular with premium policy holders. What's the message after 10 years about the impact of that surcharge to those policy holders that have been paying it?
Well, I mean, clearly, as the CFO has suggested, we're in a much different posture. It's been a long, hard, tough fight to get where we are. We were in a position where, frankly, we were on a precipice of, we were seeing some of those assessments, but frankly, another major hurricane happened after 2004 and 5 without significant substantive change, structural change to the marketplace in Florida would have left us in great peril of economic ruin.
That last voice is Kevin McCarty. He's the former insurance commissioner for the state of Florida, a job he held for 13 years until last month. Still to come, as our conversation continues, the concentration of Citizens Insurance in South Florida and what it says is driving premiums higher. And it's not storm insurance.
The claims experience in the Tri-County area is significantly worse than the claims experience in the rest of state.
And explain what that means, claims experience. You mean claims that are being filed by policyholders for money that they would like back?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, we're talking about the ability of the state of Florida and its insurance industry to financially withstand this hurricane season. We sat down with the four people at the center of it all, Florida's Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater, new Insurance Commissioner Jason Altmaier, the outgoing Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty, and Barry Gilway, the CEO at Citizens Insurance, the largest property insurer in South Florida and the insurer backed by state taxpayers.
Can you confidently tell taxpayers that they won't be on the hook if a major storm hits Citizen policyholders, which are concentrated here in South Florida?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a smaller company today. We're about a third of what we were. But let me throw out the most compelling number. 4 years ago, if a 1 in 100 event would have occurred, we would have required an $11.6 billion assessment. That assessment as of 2015 is gone. So we could actually weather a 1 in 100 initial storm and a 1 in 16 second or backup storm, and we still would not have to assess our policyholders. It's principally for three reasons. One, obviously the depopulation program has reduced our probable maximum loss or our exposure dramatically. Secondly, we only placed $500 million worth of reinsurance. Last year, we placed $3.9 billion worth of reinsurance, transferring that risk to the international market. And today, by the way, we actually dropped the amount of reinsurance we placed from 3.9 to 2.5, principally because we didn't need it. We were so much smaller, and our PML, probable maximum loss, had dropped so significantly that we were able to reduce the overall reinsurance placement this year.
And a lot of that, of course, is driven by that first issue, which is depopulation. Fewer policies, fewer expensive policies, and that, of course, leads to fewer claims and fewer dollars on the hook for Citizens.
Well, that's accurate. Even though we have dropped, I think it's important for this audience to know that we're not dropping as rapidly in the Tri-County area, although we...
Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade.
Exactly.
Yeah. As well as Monroe County.
As well as Monroe.
Sure.
Monroe, basically, for residential risk, we're 90% of the market in Monroe County. In the Tri-County area, we're close to 20% of the overall risk. We still have close to 300,000 policyholders out of the 490,000 that are Tri-County customers. It's just simply not dropping as fast here as it is in the balance of the state.
Does it concern you that Citizens is becoming too concentrated in South Florida?
Well, there's no question. It is concerning, principally because, obviously, we're getting closer and closer to the definition of Citizens, and that's a residual market risk. So the claims experience in the Tri-County area is significantly worse than the claims experience in the rest of state.
And explain what that means, claims experience. You mean claims that are being filed by policyholders for money that they would like back?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I think one of the primary reasons is a substantial increase, a dramatic increase in water damage claims that are being placed, by Tri-County customers.
Is depopulation over? Is Citizens coming to an end of how small it can get?
We're getting very, very close. There are certain elements that still represent an opportunity for some companies. Surprisingly, we have a, of, uh, Many companies that are interested in wind-only risks taking advantage, frankly, of the reinsurance market as defined by Commissioner McCarty, ex-Commissioner McCarty.
Let me ask ex-Commissioner and the current Commissioner, is that a wise move? I know you're not going to call balls and strikes necessarily, but is it a wise move for a financial entity, an insurance company, to write wind-only policies in the state of Florida?
So we look at a company's business plan very closely, and I think probably 4 or 5 years ago, we might have looked at that very skeptically, but we have several companies who have built business models, very credible business models around wind-only business, and they've done it because of some of the market dynamics that we've talked about briefly here, the fact that the conditions in the reinsurance market are much more favorable. Companies are able to lock in longer-term insurance contracts at better rates that allows them to plan into the future a lot better. The scientific models around the wind-only risk is becoming much more sophisticated. It allows them to drill down much better. And after you sit and you talk with some of these management teams that are looking at wind-only programs, a lot of the times the wind-only programs are methods they use to diversify their overall book of business. Mm-hmm. And they've got very sophisticated.
So they have coverage elsewhere in their policy book where it's not wind-only then?
Precisely.
So President Gilway, you see still an opportunity to move off of some wind policies that Citizens has today?
Yeah, I still believe there's some opportunities, I believe, in wind-only business. Our experience in the mobile home marketplace has been pretty positive. So I think there's some opportunities in the mobile home.
Positive meaning fewer policies from Citizens.
Fewer policies.
Okay.
So I think there's an opportunity for some companies that are going to be attracted to, you know, mobile home business. And also the wind only.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a market restriction in the marketplace primarily because of the assignment of benefits issues and the growth in those claims. And our concern, to be very frank, is not further depopulation, it's repopulation.
People coming back to Citizens.
Right.
Driven by
the private market being less receptive to writing new business and renewing business primarily in the Tri-County area.
Assignment of benefits, this AOB, it's another acronym you'll hear in the insurance industry, obviously. A homeowner is essentially signing over control of their claim to a third party. It could be a contractor who they're hiring to do the repair work, or in all likelihood, it could be a law firm as well that's going to come in. Your group, Citizens, has done a study and has found that these assignment of benefit claims are twice as expensive for Citizens than claims that are still held by the policy owner, and they're much more likely to lead to lawsuits, litigation, which also leads to higher payouts. This is what you are concerned that could drive a repopulation of Citizens.
That's correct. I mean, the numbers that you're quoting are very close.
Barry, let me back up a little bit. What are we talking about in terms of water damages? These hot water heaters that leak, or these leaky shower heads in the wall? What are we talking about?
This is non-wind water. So it's really burst pipes.
Okay.
It is leaky faucets.
And the increase that Citizens is seeing, and is it across the insurance industry, Commissioner, or is it not just Citizens who's seeing these increases in water claims?
So we have done a data call looking at this issue, and there is an increase in the frequency of water claims that insurance companies are seeing. There's also an increase in the severity of those claims.
And what's driving that? In other words, are these construction defects that people are living with and discovering now 5-10 years after the construction boom and the rush to build in 05 and 04? Or are these folks just discovering that they got a leaky faucet and let me file a claim now?
Well, I think what's driving it is really the current legal interpretation of the coverage within a homeowner's three or a homeowner's policy. Primarily, the homeowner's policy is the coverage is meant to respond to, quote, sudden and accidental losses. The reality is the current interpretation of the courts has really supported the fact that it's being interpreted as a maintenance policy and agreement. I agree with Commissioner Altmaier that the frequency of loss has gone within Citizens alone from 9% up to 16%, and the severity has gone from $9,000 to almost $14,000. That's happened over 3 years.
Over 3 years.
Right.
And so is there a policy prescription? Is there a regulatory prescription, first of all, Commissioner Altmaier?
So first of all, let's let's just acknowledge that consumers need to have the ability to assign their policy in certain circumstances. The challenge that we're seeing is that there's a small number of players in the marketplace, not consumers, but contractors, law firms, etc., that have found ways to exploit the existing assignment of benefits mechanism in a manner that benefits them.
So would you see one prescription being to a policymaker, the legislature, to tighten up the ability to assign those benefits?
Potentially, and we expect that stakeholders will likely address the legislative fix this upcoming session. What we have done recently, and Citizens was the leader in this, and other private companies have followed their lead. Consumers have historically always had the obligation under their policy to report a claim in a timely manner to their insurance company. Mm-hmm. They've also had the ability to make repairs to their home to mitigate against further damage. Currently, as President Gilway has alluded to, the terms of those policies, the way they've historically been written, have been very liberally interpreted by certain courts in a manner that is causes losses to be potentially higher than what they actually should have been. So we have looked at policy form changes and implemented some policy form changes that provide more specificity to when an insured is to report a claim to their insurance company, right, and how much they have to spend on mitigation techniques.
So let's talk about some of these policy changes that were heralded by Citizens and approved by Commissioner McCarty, your commission, before you left, and of course you're inherited with Commissioner Altmaier. Restrictions on when the permanent repairs can begin. No coverage for repairs that start 3 days before the reported loss. So you have to report the loss first before you start to do your covered permanent repair. Loss has to be inspected by Citizens in this case, or by the insurer, and it has to be approved by the insurance company. In addition, homeowners have to take emergency measures to protect an insured property from more damage, so that further damage, if it happens, could not exceed $3,000 or 1% of insured value. Now, from an insurance industry perspective, Commissioner Altmaier, you're confident that begins to tighten up this loss, these losses that have driven premiums in South Florida especially?
We think it's a really good start. They're new to the marketplace, and so we need some additional time to see how those are going to play out in terms of cost savings.
Technically, these policy changes, President Gilway, I think, take effect July 1st, so policyholders aren't even living by these rules just yet.
Correct. They're effective July 1st, which means basically it'll be July 1st of next year before they really apply to our entire
portfolio, right? This is not for storm driven water damage, is it?
No, this is not for storm driven water damage. Okay. This is being driven primarily by a number of major law firms that have aggressively caught on to the assignment of benefits issue. You have we have six law firms that are responsible for 57% of the entire assignment of benefits losses that occur in the state, and you've got 20 law firms that are responsible for 88% of all the assignment of benefit losses. So this is a mechanism that, you know, some major law firms have adopted to really take advantage of, in my opinion, a very weak interpretation of the insurance coverage.
Well, let's take it out of the judicial area and the interpretation, perhaps, of the regulatory, and put it to the executive branch. CFO Atwater, is there regulatory relief? Is there legislative relief that you and the governor are likely to propose in the next legislative session when it comes to this administration of benefits? Something that you've heard the insurance commissioner here, as well as the CEO of Citizens, blame essentially for the continued higher premiums that South Florida residents are having to pay.
It's going to be the most important issue facing our South Florida neighbors for the next 2 to 3 years, this very issue. I say it's not theoretical because in the Tampa Bay area, just a few years ago, what became known as Sinkhole Alley,
right,
there were legitimate sinkholes. But tens of thousands of sinkhole claims came pouring in, and in fact, very few ever went back to the building department and asked for a permit to actually do repairs, but they took the claims paid. What that did is the private sector market abandoned the geography, rates went up, they had choice, they had no choice, no innovation, and it was the honest neighbor that suffered, not the one that got away with the false claim. And I'm not going to suggest to any of your listeners there's not legitimate water claims. This is going to help us get back to the legitimate claim and take care of that person with rapid speed and care. What you've heard just now and your listeners have heard is, how can we go about this first before we abandon the idea that of an assignment of benefit where someone can legitimately use such an assignment, which is necessary and has been part of policies for a long time. Can we administratively, is what's taking place here, put a little greater parameters around before you begin utilizing the external players to begin the repair? Let us come in and take the look. Let any private insurer validate. Advance quickly the claim. Don't wait a month before filing the claim. If we need to, and I don't know experientially whether we're going to have enough to go on by the time we arrive in Tallahassee come March 1st, from the efforts that are being made now administratively, will we see enough of a change that we would say, hey, let's back off. Let's let this administrative regulatory scheme work, and let's not do anything that would take away the benefits or the opportunities for a consumer to have alternatives. Last thing we want is for the consumer that is paid out of their hard-earned money for premium to be taken care of and to have lost any rights under the system.
I think what companies may look at doing, as President Gilway alluded to just a moment ago, is they may look at and say, if this continues to be a problem in certain regions of the state, we may consider not writing as much business in those particular regions of the state. And that could lead, as President Gilway mentioned, to a repopulation of citizens.
That's the new Florida Insurance Commissioner, David Altmaier. Still to come, we talk more with him about how many of the biggest property insurance companies in Florida today have not been through a hurricane.
So I think there are a lot of encouraging factors at play in our marketplace that give us a lot of confidence and very encouraging that our private companies are going to be able to respond in times of stress.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. WLRN had the exclusive opportunity to sit down with the four top officials involved with protecting what is probably your biggest asset, your biggest investment, your home. We spoke with Florida CFO Jeff Atwater, Citizens Property Insurance CEO Barry Gilway, the former State Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty, and the new Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier. Now, Altmaier presides over one of the largest and most complex insurance markets in the country. It's also one of the most expensive. Florida's average homeowner's insurance premium is almost twice the national average, and most of the companies Florida homeowners pay to take the risk of storm damage have not experienced a hurricane themselves. Here's David Altmaier.
I think there are a lot of unique characteristics that Florida has that aren't present in other states. Number one, obviously, we have more coastline exposed to catastrophic damage than any other state in the United States. And so that is a big factor in the amount of premium that our consumers pay. We additionally have typically higher home values. There's a lot more construction on the beach and near the beach. We have a lot of people moving to the state on a daily basis into newer homes. And so I think a lot of those factors are what primarily drive the cost of insurance for Floridians.
Let me ask you about the robustness of the Florida private insurance market. Top five statewide structure property insurers with wind: Citizens Property, Universal Property, a publicly traded company, Federated National, publicly traded company, Heritage Property, publicly traded company, and Security First. When you take a look at the top 10 with the biggest structure policies with wind coverage in South Florida, five of them have been licensed since 2005. So half of the top 10 property insurers with wind coverage in South Florida haven't experienced a hurricane at all. How are policyholders protected here?
There are a lot of dynamics about our marketplace that I think are very encouraging with respect to property insurance. I think several years ago when the legislature raised the surplus requirement for property riders to $15 million, that was a huge step. I think the fact that the reinsurance market, there's so much capital coming into the reinsurance market. Our insurance companies are really driving the car when it comes to negotiating with the reinsurance companies, whereas back in 2008, 2009, the roles were reversed. And so I think there are a lot of encouraging factors at play in our marketplace that give us a lot of confidence and very encouraging that our private companies are going to be able to respond in times of stress.
CFO Atwater?
Yeah, Tom, that's a really good question, because there's two important points here. One is, how will the management team react? Will they get out there with the claims adjusters? And all of that has to be proven in their business model. Yes, it has now, regrettably, but one of these days we're going to find out and experience if they deliver. But they've shown us in business modeling and how they've established themselves. The second is the claims paying capacity, which should be important to your listeners. And what the commissioner didn't mention, and he and Commissioner McCarty have worked on this for 3 years, is stress testing these domestic players that may not be household names. And they have put them through, as they have done again this year, and they will be doing again in a couple of months, a series of events, historical events, to see how their portfolio would perform if the worst occurred, a single event or a series of events. And that has proven to show that they can perform during our worst nightmare.
Those stress tests looked at the 47 Fort Lauderdale hurricane, which came right down downtown Fort Lauderdale, and then looked at a repeat of the 04-05. When you did these stress tests in 2015, 67 companies were stress tested, 67 property insurance companies. All of them passed. So all of them, Commissioner Altmaier, according to, and Commissioner McCartney, according to your stress test, said they could withstand those kinds of storms. 40 of those companies, though, were founded in 2004 or after. So again, back to this point, the models have been stress test. Perhaps they have the financial capability according to the spreadsheets, but do they have that management experience? Do they have the ability to have the call centers up and running, to have the adjusters on the ground? What kind of confidence do you have, and your office has, as the ultimate regulator of insurance industry, that they've got the people power and the wherewithal to service those policies and service those premium holders that have been paying those dollars?
And as the CFO mentioned, that's one of the things that we spend an awful lot of time looking at when reviewing not only the business plans when the companies initially come in the door to be licensed, but that's a continual process. The stress test is a really great tool. It's one tool of many that we have at our disposal to look at. So we're constantly looking at the management team. They come in often and chat with us about their business plan, their business models. One of the components that we collect from our insurance companies are their disaster recovery plan. What do they have in place in terms of bringing their systems back online if they happen to be knocked out? What do they have in place in terms of claims adjusters? We've seen some really impressive technology from some of our companies that they've shown us, that how they're going to deploy their adjusters, how they're going to look at areas that have been impacted by disasters. The truth is, you're right, we'll see how that pans out when we actually have an event. Right now, we have put plenty of tools on the table for our analysis team, for us as policymakers to look at those with all the best information that we have available to us. The indications are very encouraging at this point. The
technology clearly has changed since the last time these companies have been challenged with claims. And Commissioner McCarty, you were in office at that time, the last time we saw this. We didn't have iPhones in our pockets. The iPad hadn't been developed yet. Adjusters weren't, clicking and doing drop-down menu items that were relying on 4G and 3G technology for cellular towers to have power. How confident are you in these disaster recovery plans, considering that some of these major companies are headquartered in Broward County, in Dade County, in Palm Beach County?
Yeah, as Commissioner Altmaier has alluded to, they also have, we as part of our review process, they have to have recovery units outside of Broward County. They would have a recovery unit, and most of the time it's a location outside the state of Florida. Not always, but most often outside the state of Florida. We look at the redundancies they have in their system. We learn from their past. We learned 2004, 2005 was unfortunately a multiple opportunity to learn from those, and we did. And each one of them was a new learning experience, because each storm was a different storm, hit the state in a different place, different building codes, but code enforcement. So as a state, we learned a lot. We learned a lot in terms of what we look at in terms of the human capital that the company deploys.
Is that part of the stress test? Should it be part of the stress test?
It's a component of our overall analysis process. And so the stress test is one component. We do an annual reinsurance data call in addition to the stress test. That's going to consider some of the components of the disaster recovery plan.
Commissioner Altmaier, let me ask you about one specific response that your office and Commissioner McCarty, your office actually technically received this one. State Farm had decided that it was no longer going to be providing your office the total number of policies that it had in Florida, nor the total value of those policies. It claim they were trade secrets. It went to court. It had a county court judge, a state court judge here in the state of Florida, agree with the company, with State Farm, that it did not have to provide these data points, where all these other insurance companies have been providing them really on a quarterly basis to give Commissioner Altmaier, your office and your inspectors, an idea of concentration and how much is at risk and financial wherewithal. Commissioner McCarty, this happened under your watch. Are you supporting the appeal process here to still get State Farm to give up that data?
Well, first of all, I want to make something very clear. They still provide the data. They just prohibit us from releasing the data publicly. In terms of our ability to our solvency review, in terms of looking at their concentration of risk, their risk distribution, their total insured value, we still get that information, and they willingly give that information. We've been collecting data of this like in kind since Hurricane Andrew.
Yeah.
When we did emergency rules. After that, they were subsequently codified in law, and then over time that morphed into what the data that we collect today. It is a huge resource, not only to the office, but to policymakers, so that they are aware of the concentration of risks in their counties, in their districts, their Senate
sure.
districts or legislative districts.
State Farm is a relatively minor player today compared to 1992 here in South Florida, here in Florida, really, when it comes to property insurance. Commissioner Altmaier, are other insurance companies likely to follow suit, though, and provide the data points, but tell your office, don't release it publicly?
I would anticipate that yes.
And what's the impact for policyholders then?
Well, for policyholders, it doesn't impact the review that we do for those companies at all, because as Commissioner McCarty stated, we as the regulator will still have that information, and that will still be a part of our processes and procedures. What it means from a policy standpoint, they won't be able to, for example, go onto our website and perhaps look at the market position
right.
of their carrier. They will be able to see the market position of all of the carriers, excluding information filed by companies that have been filed as a trade secret.
Right. But so you wouldn't know market share, you wouldn't know geographic concentration, you wouldn't know total policy, total amount of money that the company could be on the hook in Florida.
Right.
Eventually, the reliability of the database will be eroded completely.
Right.
Right now, we're minus State Farm. That already impacts the accuracy of the information, because without that total in there, you really don't know relative what's the rest of the insurance company's percentage of the marketplace. So if other companies were to follow suit and were successfully able to prosecute it in a judicial forum and get the same kind of injunctive relief, that would render the database relatively useless for public policy purposes.
That's Kevin McCarty. He's the former insurance commissioner for Florida. Still to come, fewer Floridians are buying flood insurance, even as the risk and cost continue rising.
For Florida, the economic driver is the acquisition of real estate and transferring of real estate. This could have hugely detrimental impacts on our economy should events occur that these losses cannot be sustained by those families.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. While Florida has been spared a hurricane over the past decade, tropical storms like Tropical Storm Colin, threatening parts of the Gulf Coast of Florida today, have brought heavy rains, leading to flooding. Flood insurance comes from the federal government. It's a program that's in debt to the tune of $23 billion. While Florida is the single biggest state for flood insurance, fewer people here are buying it. The number of flood insurance policies in Florida has dropped by 10% over the past couple of years, even as the population and number of housing units have increased. We pick up our conversation now with Florida CFO Jeff Atwater, Citizens Property CEO Barry Gilway, former insurance commissioner Kevin McCarty, and the new insurance commissioner in the state of Florida, David Altmaier.
So it could be a combination of factors. There could be consumers that have elected to no longer carry flood insurance. We have seen some increased interest from private market participants in writing flood insurance. And so there is a possibility that a lot of those consumers procure policies in the surplus lines market. We have a number of companies that are beginning to write it on an admitted basis.
Yeah, three, I believe, right now.
I think we may even be up to eight at this point. But we've just recently licensed a company called TipTap. It's
mm-hmm.
an affiliate of Homeowners Choice, and they have been licensed to exclusively write flood insurance in the state of Florida. And we're looking at ways in which we might be able to increase the private market participation in the flood insurance space here in Florida.
But presumably 7% of flood insurance policyholders didn't move to the private flood insurance in its real nascent stage. mortgage, 7% of homeowners didn't pay off their mortgages and thus not have to have flood insurance if it's a government guaranteed mortgage. Odds are, as you mentioned, the majority, one can safely presume, just decided not to get flood insurance.
I think that's a safe assumption.
And so the risk, CFO Atwater, to those homeowners, as you're shaking your head?
It's significant. This is again, you've hit the nail on the head, Tom. For Florida, the economic driver is the acquisition of real estate and transferring of real estate. This is significant to our general revenue for the state. It's significant to all economic activity in communities. Getting this right matters. And when price becomes such an impactful issue on the household budget that it goes bare, it leaves themselves exposed. This could have hugely detrimental impacts on our economy should events occur that these losses cannot be sustained by those families. So it's very real to get this right.
Former Commissioner McCarty, let me ask you, in your experience, how many Florida homes and homeowners should have flood insurance if they are to be current with their government guaranteed mortgage? Government guaranteed mortgage is a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac backed mortgage. Necessitates that mortgage holder to have flood insurance, just like it necessitates them to have property insurance.
Well, you're exactly right, and they do require to have them, and they're very aggressive at ensuring that people who are living in the high hazard zones that are backed by the federal guaranteed mortgages do, in fact, buy the coverage. Those aren't really the ones that are in questions. A lot of Floridians who are not living in the high hazard areas. We've seen lots of areas of Florida, particularly after Hurricane Francis, that were not in the high risk areas that flooded tremendously. Many of the people who have probably not purchasing this coverage are voluntarily not buying it because the price has gone up.
Right, right.
And a lot of that price is being driven by fixed costs that they're now putting on policy fees, etc. And the homeowner is making the choice decision that it's no longer a bargain. It was $200-$300 to cover your home, you would do it. Now that it's $1,000, they have to reconsider that.
This is a system not ready for reform. This flood insurance program not ready for reforms. Congress tried to do it. CFO Atwater, you saw the premium skyrocket. You saw a 7% decrease in 2014 from Florida homeowners not purchasing flood insurance.
You've got it exactly right again. And we're not going to be able to address all of this in one swell swoop with one bill, thinking you can have this kind of astronomical increase in premiums. They're going to have to figure out how can we stair-step this? How can we as Floridians create the environment for more private sector players to participate? This is going to be a multi-pronged approach to get it solved.
You've got a guy at the table here, this guy in Barry Gilway over here, who's done it not with flood insurance, of course, but with property and windstorm insurance. So as you look at your experience as President Gilway with Citizens and the depopulation, how unpopular that's been, but how financially successful, at least it's been according to the modeling, what is the advice that you have for the federal regulators when it comes to the national flood insurance program?
Well, we're actually providing that advice. We've had meetings with the government accounting office in the flood arena. We've also had meetings with the Financial Services Commission. And we have further meetings coming up. They're looking very, very hard at the Citizens Depopulation Program and the applicability of a similar program on a national level. They're taking a look at what occurred within the state of Florida and how we were able to attract, private markets into the state, attract capital, mm-hmm. Into the state. So I think there's a lot of a big comparison you could make between citizen success and what might apply, on a national level.
Some of that citizen success was done by raising prices to help bring up prices that Citizens was offering up to more of a market rate, so it was competitive, even if it was at a higher price. Secondly, of course, you benefited from the overall economic environment, which we discussed earlier, which was this flood of money into the reinsurance market that allowed insurance companies to protect themselves at a much cheaper rate.
But that's correct, Tom, but I think the real success is close working relationships with private companies. What we do is we share data with at a very detailed level with any company that wants to come into the state.
If you had to give the Treasury Department, which is ultimately financially responsible for the flood insurance program at the federal level, a piece of advice as it moves toward a reauthorization for the flood program in 2017, Congress has to okay it again, what would that piece of advice be, President Gilway?
It would be privatization. I mean, it would.
But
really,
how does it, by raising prices?
No, by providing the private market companies that have an interest in writing flood insurance with all the data, the NFIP data that might be available. And one of the issues, as I'm sure Commissioner Altmaier would agree, is that NFIP has not been receptive to providing detailed data, flood data. And that has been a real restriction on companies that want to, you know, move into that marketplace.
Commissioner McCarty, market needs two things. It needs liquidity, right? So it needs to have at least one buyer and one seller. It needs transparency.
Absolutely right. I was really wanting to build off what President Gilway was saying, is that first, before we start ratcheting up the prices, we have to make sure we have the capacity in the marketplace. You can't have the capacity in the marketplace if you have a monopoly on the data from which those companies will build their pricing. But you just can't start ratcheting up rates, hold on to the data, and hope for the best.
That's the former Florida Insurance Commissioner, Kevin McCarty. Still to come on our program, climate change, the threat of higher seas and stronger storms, and insuring Florida.
We have to now start broadening the long-term conversation for what's going to face Florida across, again, a broad range of issues, this being one of those. What are the next issues on the horizon that we should begin to come to grips with?
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Florida has a complicated relationship with the climate. The modern Florida economy rests on our warm weather and proximity to the Atlantic Ocean. These are what feeds our economy, even as they threaten it. In 2008, the Reinsurance Association of America, the trade group of companies that insure insurance companies, approved a policy that stated, quote, "Mounting evidence from the scientific community makes it increasingly clear that climate change is having a significant effect on the world's social and economic risks, and that it will continue to do so," end quote. Now, this came from the insurance industry for the insurance industry. The quartet of top insurance and state officials we spoke to also acknowledged this risk. Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier, Florida's Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater, Citizens Property CEO Barry Gilway, and the former Insurance Commissioner of Florida, Kevin McCarty.
There's no question that there is a potential impact, a dramatic impact, on a low-lying area like Florida with rising sea levels and the impact it will have on the increased frequency of storms, as it would have with other climatic activity will happen in other parts of the country as a result of that. But there's a lot of research that the industry has been on the forefront of and sharing that with the primary industry.
And Commissioner Altmaier, has the insurance, the primary insurance industry begin to respond to the reinsurance concerns that they've been voicing?
Indirectly. I think where their activity is most prevalent is their utilization of catastrophe models to look at the impact that hurricanes are going to have. And as Commissioner McCarty indicated, the science behind those, you know, when you look at the historical weather patterns and you update them for events that have happened recently, that information gets pulled into those models, which are continuously updated. And that's the most direct way that our primary writers have been staying informed on the latest research on climate change.
From one insurance perspective, President Gilway, has this entered into the tables and the actuarial tables and research at Citizens?
Well, it's the way it impacts us is the fact that the modelers, they really incorporate, you know, the change in exposure in each of their models. I happen to sit on the Hurricane Commission, and we review, you know, the validity of each of the modeling companies and the data behind that. And what you see is really considerable research that's been done, primarily, by the way, in South Florida, relative to the buildup of exposure along the coastal areas, and the impact of a potential surge, which obviously impacts flood, as a result of climate change. So the modelers are doing an enormous amount of research in evaluating what might happen in South Florida and what the impact would be both on surge and on hurricane activity.
Have you seen any impact on your pricing models or the places where citizens will and won't write coverage for certain durations?
Not really. I mean, basically today, where you see the difference is basically in the probable maximum loss that you have to respond to in the event of a hurricane.
We had a global insurance executive tell us in 2013, he called sea level rise a maintenance problem, not an insurance problem.
Personally, I would disagree with that evaluation. I don't think it most definitely is a maintenance problem, because obviously there are going to be jurisdictions that have to respond to potential sea level rise and develop infrastructure that can respond to that. But it's also a reinsurance problem. In my opinion, it most definitely is a problem relative to flood exposure because of the surge. And it would also be an issue in my mind relative to, hurricane risk and the exposure that you have to account for when you're placing your insurance programs.
From a legislative side, CFO Atwater, we're seeing dry day flooding in Miami Beach. You're well aware of that. You know, Palm Beach County very, very well. You've seen a lot of buildup on the coastline there and some of the challenges it's having with king tides, at least on dry day, and of course the threat of storm surges. Is there a legislative focus that needs to happen here long term?
Tom, I would answer that yes. And I think that when you think of the population growth rates that is taking place here, the continued significant concentrations along shorelines in Florida, you think about several matters. You're speaking to one of those. I think that at the moment we are seeing a return of this conversation we've been having, a return of a robust marketplace, a return of healthy growth in our state's financial condition. That is beginning to mask or disguise longer-term issues that we're going to have to, and it's our responsibility as leaders, to push the narrative and push the conversation and try to begin to force the kind of, again, action that often in the legislative process and the political process does not ripe until it's crisis in nature.
And let me ask you as a follow-up, are you comfortable having that conversation in Florida? Florida, the scientists will say, is the canary in the coal mine, but of course there's folks in your administration that have been very reluctant to have these kinds of conversations when it comes to climate change and the impact on Florida's environment as well as Florida's economy and culture.
We have to now start broadening the long-term conversation for what's going to face Florida across, again, a broad range of issues, this being one of those. What are the next issues on the horizon that we should begin to come to grips with?
Florida's Chief Financial Officer, Jeff Atwater. Now, a lot's changed in the decades since the last storm hit the state. Technology advancements, the rise of social media, and better weather forecasting. But none of it replaces the risk of our geography. This is our final program for this season. We'll be back on Mondays beginning in September with a new season. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.